Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter six, Dhyana Yoga text 4. Idahi Nendriarteshu Nakarmas Vanusajite Sarva Sankalpa Sanyasi Yogarudasta Tochite Yada, when he certainly na not indriya arteshu in sense gratification na never karmasu and fruitive activities anusajite one necessarily engages sarva sankalpa of all material desires, sannyasi, renouncer, yoga ruda, elevated in yoga, tada, at that time, uchite, is said to be. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Person is said to be elevated in yoga when having renounced all material desires, he neither acts for sense gratification nor engages in fruitive activities. Purport. When a person is fully engaged in the transcendent loving service of the Lord, he is pleased in himself. Thus he is no longer engaged in sense gratification or fruitive activities. Otherwise one must be engaged in sense gratification, since one cannot live without engagement. Without Krishna consciousness, one must be always seeking self-centered or extended selfish activities. But a Krishna conscious person can do everything for the satisfaction of Krishna and thereby be perfectly detached from sense gratification. One who has no such realization must mechanically try to escape material desires for being elevated to the top rung of the yoga ladder. Idahi Nendriarteshu Nakarmas Vanusajite Sarva Sankalpa Sanyasi Yogarudasta Tochite. Person is said to be elevated in yoga, but having renounced all material desires, he neither acts for sense gratification nor engages in fruitive activities. Namo Vishnu Vraya Krishna Pristai Bhute Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tiramane Namaste Sarasvatundeve Gauravani Vicharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskyatyade Sitarne. Again, we have the contrast between sense gratification and Krishna consciousness, between selfish activities and selfish activities. Now, again, we may think selfless activities. I don't really care about myself, as if we're going to work in Krishna consciousness and we're going to suffer even more than we're already suffering. But we're happy that Krishna is happy at least. It's not quite like that. That selfishness generally means self-centered activities, means sense gratification. And as I've explained, sense gratification doesn't mean happiness. It means trying to solve miseries and actually winding up usually more miserable. On the other hand, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he had three purposes to come to this world, and one of them was to experience the happiness that Radharani experiences by her love. In other words, if we actually love Krishna, just by loving Krishna, then we'll feel happiness. It's not that when we become selfless, then we suffer. It's actually when we become selfless in relationship to Krishna for His satisfaction, just by loving Krishna, we become completely satisfied. The other reason why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came was to experience the Krishna's love for Srimati Radharani. So not only when we experience our own love for Krishna, we become happy. When we experience Krishna's love, then we become even happier. So by loving Krishna, we not only become happy by experiencing our own love for Krishna, but we become even happier when we experience Krishna's happiness by being loved. And not only that, but then we realize some of Krishna's wonderful qualities, which are all spiritual and full of happiness. So, we not only get one kind of happiness, just the alleviation from material desire, but we also get multiple happinesses from unlimited devotees. That is, not only we can feel Krishna's happiness, and we can feel our own happiness in loving Krishna and the wonderful Krishna that qualities that Srimati Radharani realizes when she serves and loves Krishna. But we can experience that with every soul. And that's eternal and only increasing. On the other hand, sense gratification is always more or less the same. Just like if you have a feast. Sometimes we have feasts, at least some temples, they have like 108 preparations. Does anyone have been a feast with 108 preparations? So how many preparations can you eat before they all start tasting the same? Now Krishna can eat 108 preparations. If we eat more than eight, they all kind of merge into one taste. And you're always thinking, well, I haven't tried this one, and I haven't tried that one. And you're actually, the more you eat, the more dissatisfied you become. And if you take the ones that are the richest, the galabdham or something, it kills your taste for everything else. And then you become even more upset. I haven't tasted the samosas, the malpur, and I have no desire to do so. Maybe I should take some and put them in a container and save them for tomorrow. Because I can't eat them now. So material experience is quite limited. And not only that, but if you have sweet rice every day, then you don't even look forward to sweet rice. If you have challah every day, after a while, challah tastes the same every day. Then if you can just get some normal porridge, you think, wow, this is really good. So material desire means unlimited desires for unlimited tastes and inability to even taste them, to experience them. It's mostly in the imagination, dreaming how good it would be, how wonderful it would be when finally the Sunday feast comes. And then the Sunday feast comes and you're in anxiety that the Sunday feast is ending with every bite. And I still haven't enjoyed. And I was looking forward to this so much that I was going to enjoy. And I'm not really enjoying this, the amount that I thought I was going to enjoy. When am I finally going to enjoy? Finally get the opportunity to peacefully sit down and just enjoy. Rather than sit here and talk to my friends and I don't even know what I'm eating anymore. I remember when I was a brahmachari, my temple president came to me. This is in 1969, I think, or maybe 70. And he said, would you like to get married? So I said, no, I'm not really interested in it. He said, no, if you want to be a leader in our society, especially, he said, you have to get married. So I said, well, if you get married, then they have a special feast. And your wife cooks it. So our prajnanam at that time wasn't very good. So I was like, all right, I'll get married, why not? Get a feast at least. So I got married officially by a fire sacrifice, not legally. I never found out my wife's name. So, but she cooked the feast and it was terrible. I thought I'm wasting my time. Anyhow, the marriage didn't work out. I never found out who she was. And I got legal married, so we never had to get divorced. And she disappeared. So I wasn't exactly what she was looking for. And she wasn't what I was looking for. I read the Bhagavad Gita and she'd fall asleep. I said, well, this is not going to work out. In any case, the point was, I was able to say, you know, you can make a goal like, I'll get married if I can have one feast. And if it doesn't turn out, then the marriage doesn't turn out. So that's the nature of material life. It's so superficial. And in order to make it less superficial, they had all kinds of, when it was absorbed in the Vedic conception, dutifulness to Krishna, when Krishna was added to it, God consciousness, then people had a purpose behind what they were doing. They had some higher purpose, especially when they had children. They understood that they had to please their family. They had some conception of pleasing the elderly family members who would look after the newly married couple. It was a joint family rather than what's called the nuclear family. You heard that term, nuclear family. Husband and wife together and they're about to explode. It's called the nuclear family. And when they explode, the whole neighborhood goes off with them. So the point is, only when we actually experience, everyone wants love, that's why we're having relationships. That's why we're all, I mean, as I said, everyone is looking for love. If they can't get it in normal relationships, then they try to get it through other means. Usually more dog relationship or some pet relationship, but even through more perverted means. So love is basically, everyone wants to love, experience love, because you love ice cream, you love your car, you love this and that. And also in relationships with people, generally, all the relationships that we have with other things are somehow or another related with people, ultimately. I mean, in a normal society. I mean, in a normal society, people didn't love their dog more than their wife. Nor their wife loved the dog more than her husband. Usually the center of the relationship wasn't the dog. It was Krishna. And that way their relationship with each other was regulated and respectful at least, and was productive. They had some purpose. But when Krishna is taken away in any way, even the idea of religiosity, then it just becomes outright material sense gratification, animal life. And animal life means I bite you for a while, I chew on you, and you can chew on me for a while. And after we get done chewing on each other, we spit each other out because we don't taste good anymore. We find someone else to chew on. So that kind of animal life is not very stable. And because it's not stable, everyone is in anxiety all the time. What's going to happen when I get old? What's going to happen with the children? Society is based on sense gratification, is not even on the level of the animals. Because the animals, usually I think, you know, the lion and the lioness, they usually stay together, at least as long as the children grow up. You never heard of a lion taking a lioness to court for divorce. Of course, I'm sure they have their fighting also, but, you know, they usually remain together. In every species of life. As a matter of fact, generally speaking, they have to rely on each other for hunting or the birds for getting the nest. In other words, they have some practical work they do together. Rather than the husband goes off, you never find out the husband goes off, the lion goes off to the chase, and the lioness sits home and watches television. Now they're all engaged in some kind of productive work. So in that way, they actually have some purpose together. But nowadays, there's no purpose other than sense gratification. So just imagine people sitting together, living together just themselves with their children, and none of them are working. The only thing they're doing is trying to figure out how they're going to gratify their senses today. So you can imagine what kind of relationships they have with each other. Not very productive. But if Krishna is the center, and one actually feels love for Krishna, and actually feels Krishna's love, and actually realizes how wonderful it is by serving Krishna, we find out how wonderful the person is, all the wonderful qualities that the person we're serving has. Then the result is, when that same experience is had in relation to others, in relation to Krishna, then every relationship becomes just as wonderful as our relationship with Krishna. So if Krishna is in the center, then every relationship becomes wonderful. Every relationship with Krishna in the center is not only pleasing to Krishna, but it's pleasing to everyone. And anything time we take Krishna away, and just sense gratification, and that's just a waste of time. A very painful waste of time often. So I'll stop there. Any questions, comments? Yes.
You have a question?
In the first canto, Srila Prabhupada says that there's no possibility of an exchange of rasa between a man and an animal, or between a man and any other species of living being. At the same time, as you mentioned, people become so enamored in their dogs, and sometimes actually dogs seem to be quite understanding of their masters and serve very dutifully. So what is the meaning of this statement that there can be no rasa between a man and an animal?
Well, there is no rasa between man and man without Krishna. Or the idea is that rasa is supposed to be reciprocal. It can't be one way. As far as dogs, you may be loving your dog, but if you stop feeding him, he's not going to love you anymore. Or as it says in India, when the dogs, generally speaking, when dogs come up and lick you, you think they love you. But everyone knows in India, when the dog comes up and licks you, he's trying to find out if you're alive or not. And if you don't respond, then he'll bite your nose off. So our conception of what the mentality of the dog is, you know, part of it is just imagination. We're just like in the Krishna Leela, the gopis, they see everything in relation to Madhurya or Leela. So even they seeing that the plants and the trees are feeling separation from Krishna. Well, actually, they're not really. They have some rasa, they experience Madhurya rasa, but they're not conscious the same way that the gopis are. They're conscious, but they're not really engaged in rasa with Krishna. Although they do experience because of the ecstasy, because they're conscious living beings, but there's no rasa because there's no reciprocation. In that form, they can't reciprocate Madhurya or Leela, so it's improper to say it's rasa. So what can you do with your dog that would be rasa? Kiss it. He licks his behind and he licks you. Oh, I love you. Let me share my germs with you. So a lot of it is just imagination. Is that right? Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grandharaj Bhagavad Gita, ki jai. Srila Prabhupada, ki jai.